Well, it's summer. It's summer outside. It's summer inside, too. We're hot. We're tired. Crazy wildfires are raging across the state, although I hear there's some good news about the local holy fire now. It'll be contained by the end of the week, I'm hearing. But what a tragedy these fires have been for people and homes and trees and animals and our air and water. It's truly heartbreaking, and it is so disturbing for what it's telling us about our planet's future. It's been summer here, too, at the church. We finished our church year in June. Our children's religious education has shifted from regular programming to summer programming, Hogwarts, and then backpacks. That's why the kids aren't with us today and during the month of August. We had a great summer potluck picnic on Thursday. That was fun. We had about 40 people here, and we had a great time. And I don't see Laura Scully here, but she did a great job putting that together, and we want to appreciate her work. In the rhythm of the church year, the summer months are for slowing down, easing up, and taking off. We do it naturally because we are animal bodies and the hot weather fiercely demands that we take a break, but we do it deliberately too, choosing to move with the seasons rather than battle our way against them. So whether you take an actual summer vacation or a staycation, or if your summer schedule doesn't really change from the rest of the year, I want everyone to think about taking July as the Sabbath month of the year. If not physically and professionally, at least spiritually, give it a rest in July. Cultivate quiet and stillness. Cultivate being instead of doing. Emptying yourself instead of filling yourself up again. And if you've missed that opportunity in July, well, do it now. It's not too late. And then in August, in the rhythm of the church year, we're still in our summer mode, but we shift this month to looking forward now and starting to gear up for the work of the church that will begin when the new year begins in September. The focus for August is not to start the work of the church year to come, but to start preparing for that work. So we're setting goals and we're making plans. We're laying out the schedule and the church calendar. And then with all of that work named and arranged for September through June, we then move on to the next question for August, which is, what do we need to do now to prepare for that work when it begins? The work starts in September. But in August, there's the pre-work work of preparing for the work. So that's where we are in August here at the church. And there is a lot of work ahead in the coming church year, starting in September. The board, your board, took a retreat day back in June, and they identified about a half a dozen pretty large goals for the church to work on over the coming year. Work around our internal church communications. So we'll be asking, how does the congregation get the information that it needs about our activities and programs? How do we use our website and newsletter, our weekly email announcements and the bulletin boards and Facebook effectively? And who's in charge of producing all of that content and editing it? We'll do work around leadership development in the coming year. We're going to do some related work to that about our governance structure so that we continue to honor our democratic decision-making and recognize the realities of volunteer workloads and time commitments and the realities of a changing larger culture that thinks about participation in communities and institutions in new ways. We want to get our church policies organized and accessible and up to date this coming year. We want to make the physical space of our church look a little more attractive and more functional, starting with this hall You can look around and see for yourself a few things that might need some fixing up. But also the church office, which is still recovering from that water leak we had a couple of months ago. That open space outside my office that's recovering from a tree that was removed a few months ago. And maybe some air conditioning. Wouldn't that be nice? And then there are the two big goals for the coming year, even bigger, which are one, hosting the district assembly, which we'll be hosting here next April, and also preparing our congregation to elect a search committee that'll probably happen next May, a committee who will then work on identifying a candidate who will hopefully become your next settled minister. So that's a long list of work to do. And most of us will need to be involved in at least some of those projects if we are to actually get them all done over the coming year. And the board and other groups involved are already busy doing the planning and scheduling. But what can the rest of us do now to prepare for that kind of work? What could we be doing now, still in the heat of August, so that when we are called to report for work in the fall, we will be ready? How do you get ready for any kind of work? How do you prepare yourself, mind, body, heart, and soul, or mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, to do good work? Back in April, I attended a training that was recommended by the Unitarian Universalist Association for interim ministers like myself. Part of the training was to remind the ministers in the room that as they care for the congregations and churches they're assigned to also stay conscious of the need to care for ourselves. Self-care is important for everyone in any kind of work. All of us need to recognize our limits as finite creatures that we all are. We have to learn to say no to work that isn't properly ours. And to the work that we say yes to, we must attend to the balance of what we are giving out and what we need to take in to replenish our resources. Self-care refreshes us when we are feeling worn down from some work that we've done. And self-care is also a means to prepare ourselves before hard work begins. How do I get in shape? Asks the athlete before they start the marathon. What will I need? Says the backpacker who's preparing for a big trip. How could I show up on the first day as ready as I am able, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually? Now, we talk about self-care quite often when our ministers gather for our three times a year meetings. And sometimes the self-care talk at those ministers' gathering comes across to me as jokey and unhelpful. It feels like that nervous kind of laughter that reveals our deeper embarrassment about the subject. It's embarrassing to reveal our needs. It's spiritually challenging for anyone to recognize their limits. So we make jokes about self-care being going shoe shopping, and we call it retail therapy. Or we brag about how we're too busy for self-care. Or we minimize self-care to pretend that we can adequately replenish our souls by simply scheduling a monthly manicure or an occasional massage. What we often fail to address in our embarrassment and anxiety around self-care is the perverseness of the way the issue is framed in the first place. Because self-care shouldn't mean exhausting yourself through soul-damaging work and then recovering at the mall or the nail salon. Self-care shouldn't be working yourself to burnout and then collapsing until you have sufficient courage again to go back for more abuse. The goal should be, shouldn't it, that you arrange your life so that caring for yourself is part of what you do every day anyway. Why should our work be inherently stressful and draining? Why should self-care be a treat that you give yourself occasionally rather than a part of your healthy meal plan? Self-care shouldn't be a cure that you have to take for the poison of the rest of your life. Because our goal should be to create lives, including our work lives, that satisfies our own needs as well as serves the needs of others. So I was pleased in this training I took back in April when we got to the self-care unit that it wasn't about manicures and massages. It was about lifestyle. And it wasn't just about recovering from physical exhaustion and mental burnout. It was about really caring for ourselves, mind, body, heart, and soul. The material that was shared in the class, which I want to share some of it with you now, comes from an Episcopal minister whose name is Reverend Dr. Scott Stoner. He developed a program that he calls Life Compass, and he has a website, so you can look that up if you want. Life Compass, it's called, Dr. Scott Stoner. He also has books and a curriculum that he developed that he offers to church groups who want to work on this together. So as part of this month of preparation for the church year to come, here today and for the next two Sundays are some thoughts about how we can prepare ourselves for maximum strength and health, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. So let's start today with the compass point on his life compass. He identifies as mental health, the dimension of mind. How do we care for our mental well-being? For Dr. Stoner, mental well-being manifests in two places. The first has to do with arranging our lives in ways that are congruent with our values. Primarily, that means for most of us, good, satisfying, and fulfilling work. What we do for a living should reflect how we want to live. And the second manifestation of mental well-being addressed by Dr. Stoner is organization of our time and our physical environment. And I'll get back to organization in a minute. So mental well-being as a part of our work life. Here's what Dr. Stoner says. Many people spend a great deal of their waking hours each week at work or at school, and how we experience our work or school life can have a major impact on our wholeness and wellness. He then gives a series of questions that you can use for self-reflection about your level of satisfaction with this aspect of your life. And he says, if you aren't working now or in school now, you might relate these questions to some volunteer activity that you're involved in. So here are Dr. Stoner's questions. Is the work, schooling, service you do congruent with your values and beliefs? Do you have a sense of purpose in your work, schooling, or service? Do you see how your work, schooling, or service fits into the bigger purpose of your life? How do you relate to those with whom you work or serve or go to school? Are you comfortable expressing your needs and wants in the place where you work or serve or at school? Are you growing in your work, school, and service? Do you intentionally seek opportunities for growth and learning? And do you see a connection between your faith and your work, school, or service? How do those questions make you feel about what you do for work? Did you have trouble naming your core values to start with? Is it possible you might want to make a shift in your job or even a change in your career to find something that better fits your values and better supports your mental self-care? I was thinking about this a week ago. My husband Jim and I were in the car listening to a podcast of This American Life. And one of the stories was about a guy who runs a business where he cleans up crime scenes. Pretty horrible work. Imagine doing that every day. Would that support your values? It might. I also was thinking about the people who have that job of carrying out federal immigration policy. What if part of your workday required you to separate young children from their families? The Buddhists call this necessity to choose work that supports your values right livelihood. It's step 5 of the Noble Eightfold Path. If what you spend your day working on contradicts your values, then you are going to experience your work as unfulfilling, stressful, and exhausting. You'll feel annoyed or angry throughout the day, and you will quickly burn out. And when the weekend comes, you'll need restorative self-care that's about erasing the rest of your life rather than integrating your work experience and feeling pride of accomplishment. But if your work expresses your values, then you would experience your work life as satisfying and fulfilling. It's still work, so you're still going to need a rest and weekends off and a vacation. You still need to have other special experiences and attend to other parts of your life. But you will be attending to your mental well-being while you are working, not having to do additional self-care to recover from working. Our work should express our values. That's the spiritual dimension of meaning. Our work should accomplish something that we regard as worthy. That's the spiritual dimension of purpose. And the purpose of our immediate work should also contribute to some larger purpose that we feel is important to the larger world and the larger movement of humanity, and that's part of what we mean by faith. So the other part of mental self-care that's lifted up by Dr. Stoner is the dimension of organization. And he means by this how we organize our time, our physical environment, our finances, and our planning for the future. He invites us, as you do a personal self-care assessment, to, quote, take an honest look at your life and assess how well you organize all the important things in your life. Time. Finances, closets and drawers and bookshelves. Yes, coffee tables is my problem. Grocery shopping, preparing meals, running errands, paying bills, your email inbox, making plans for the future, like writing a will and keeping track of your important papers. Being disorganized causes mental stress. It makes our work harder and it makes projects take longer. Fortunately, for most people, organization is a habit that can be learned. At first, you might need some support or some coaching, but setting the intention and sticking with it, you could probably make progress and eventually learn a new habit, or you might need to hire someone to organize for you. Being disorganized is also a symptom of mental stress. When we feel stressed, we focus on the tasks that we perceive as urgent. We seek the gratification, the comfort of immediate gratification. So we prioritize urgent work, even if it's trivial, and we put off more important but long-term projects. Planning is the first thing to go. We just do whatever's in front of us or has a deadline blinking. Bigger projects loom, but they don't get attended to. Lack of organization causes our stress level to go up, which makes it harder to get organized, which makes our stress level go even higher. Dr. Stoner writes, in the end, planning and prioritizing will save us time and make our lives much calmer, but it is hard to realize this when we are caught up in our constant busyness. So, that's why we designate the month of August in the church calendar as a month of preparation. Church continues year-round, but we can't spend an entire year at one level of intensity. Without an intentional time for goal setting and planning, our church work would eventually spiral into trivial busyness and stress. Deliberately, we set aside the months of July and August to get away from our regular work mode. July for Sabbath, August for planning and prioritizing. Now is the time to lay aside the demand of the urgent but trivial and instead look further out to the district assembly coming in April, to the election of a search committee coming in May, to ask between now and then, these months of September, October, November, and so on, what do we need to do? What are the issues? What are the needful things? What are the steps? What will we do to make meaning in our lives by creating a world that more and more manifests our values? What is our purpose as individuals and as a church? And what should we do that will serve our health as we serve the health of others?